Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to another edition of the Dado Download Podcast, a part of the Peristyle Podcast family of shows. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, alongside my child co-host, Jack Smith, because he called me old before we started recording this. We're here to bring you the latest on the USC Trojans baseball program. That's what this podcast is about. It's the greatest college baseball program in all the land, having won 12 national championships through the years. However, it's been a while since that happened, and there were some big expectations this season, and it has not started off really well. Jack, how are we doing today, young buck, and where are the Trojans at right now?
Shotgun, I am enjoying my youth. It was raining here in LA today, which kind of sucked after seeing the 80 degree temperatures out in Texas. But I was out there for USC playing against two top 10 teams. I played TCU twice, Texas A&M once. Lost all three, despite being at least at one point in each of the three games, you kind of felt like. But Andy Stankiewicz said no moral victories for this squad as of right now, and it's because the Trojans right now sit at 3-9, coming off of one win, which we'll get into. But since our last podcast, when we thought things might have been turning around after two wins against Portland, 1-4 in five games.
Yeah, and we've seen some of the same issues. We've seen some positive things, some other negative things that are continuing. But I first got to start with, you went to Texas. I enjoyed your call. I didn't get to watch all the games. I listened to some of yours because I was driving all over Virginia. I went to the Central Virginia Classic. I didn't even know there was a Virginia Classic until I was going, but it was actually some good baseball. Saw Boston College a couple times, Richmond, VCU, Central Connecticut State, you know, all these powerhouses.
Do you think it's actually a classic thing, or did they just slap the classic name on the back? Because I don't think you could name something a classic that's not a classic.
That's a great question. I only saw that it had been done last year. I don't know if they had done it the previous years before that, so I don't know. But they play at three different stadiums, William & Mary, Richmond, and VCU are all in the same kind of area, about 30 minutes to an hour apart. So it's kind of interesting that they play, and it's three different teams kind of rotating. So it's kind of a rotational weekend, which you see in some series like South Carolina, Clemson. You know, I would love to see USC, UCLA actually do this in the future. I know they do the Dodgertown Classic, and that's kind of kind of similar to what the Central Virginia Classic is, which USC is not participating in this year. That just happened. But I wouldn't mind seeing USC UCLA play one game at home, one game on the road, and then one game in a neutral site being Dodger Stadium. However, you're not going to see that really with the fact that they are in the same conference. You see these more with Georgia Tech or some of these programs that are their rivals, but in different conferences. So we'll see what they do in the future. The one game in the Dodgertown Classic is definitely fun because then you get an extra game to face off against your rivals. And if it's in Dodger Stadium like it was this year again, always a really fun environment. You got to go to a different MLB park Globe Life. What were your just overall thoughts on the park and the atmosphere and whatnot, seeing the TCU, Texas A&M fans? I fortunately was able to cover a super regional between those two fan bases facing off, which was phenomenal. So your first time really kind of getting to see those fan bases, what'd you think?
Well, first of all, it was my first time in Texas, so it was cool to knock another state off of the list, which I think
well,
I was counting
six,
up.
Six now? You got about six now?
No, I've got six this school year. Six this school year is kind of crazy. With football season and now going to Texas during the baseball season, I'll knock Massachusetts off the list this summer. So it's getting up there. But first time in Texas, it was enjoyable. I was happy to get out there. And then first time in Globe Life Field, I've seen it on TV, and it was really, really nice just from the way it looked outside to the way it looked inside. Super nice stadium. I would love to see it with 40,000 fans in it. I feel like the most we got was maybe up to 4,000 during the Texas A&M game. The first game of the weekend against TCU was an afternoon Friday game, so everyone's working. It was kind of hard for people to show up. There were some TCU fans there, but it was definitely pretty low attendance. The Texas A&M game was crazy. That was easily the most attended game of the weekend. Those fans are awesome. And then Sunday, it was the last game of the day. The Texas A&M fans all left after their game against Arizona State. And so I feel like USC playing the first game and the last game made it so I didn't see a bunch of attendance. But it was still a really good experience. The stadium was awesome. The press box view was the best I've ever had for a baseball game, for sure. Although it was hard to adjust being so much higher than, you know, I'm used to, but definitely really fun. The one thing I didn't know is that AT&T Stadium for the Cowboys is right across mm-hmm. from Globe Life Field, which makes no sense why they're called the Dallas Cowboys if they play in Arlington, in my opinion.
Yes, I actually had gone to the previous Arlington Stadium. I don't even remember the name of it now. If Arlington Stadium.
Are you talking about the baseball stadium?
Baseball, yes.
Right now, the name on it was Choctaw Stadium.
Okay, so I've been to that one. I'm actually on my drive to L.A. when I went out to USC for grad school. I was stopping at baseball stadiums along the way. The Rangers came back from like a 4-run deficit in the ninth to win the game. There was every game that I went to was exciting in some form or fashion. So I remembered a little bit against the Red Sox. So I did get a chance to see the previous stadium, and I've been to AT&T, so I knew exactly where the Globe Life was, but I've still not been there, so I look forward to that. So I'm jealous a little bit of that. I'm also jealous whenever you get to have Whataburger, so we got to get that out of the way. You threw it out there on Twitter, and you were surprised that people were very animated about their opinions on Whataburger versus In-N-Out. I tried to tell you that Whataburger is not all about the burger. It's not. It's about getting the chicken strip sandwich. The honey barbecue Texas toast sandwich, I think is what it's called. That's where it's really at with the spicy ketchup. But I gotta get your Whataburger thoughts. You know, you can't go to Texas without having a Whataburger versus In-N-Out debate.
Yeah, I mean, I literally got it right off the plane. It was the the next restaurant over from the gate when I got off the plane. So I needed to wait for my bags anyway, and I was like, we'll go here. Funny thing enough, the Chick-fil-A right next to it was swarmed with people, and I walked right up to the front of the line at Whataburger. So I think some people don't care, but everyone on Twitter did. They were very passionate. I understand that you don't go to Whataburger just for the burger, but because it was my first time, I wanted to do that so I could make the straight comparison. That way I'd never have to do it again. And the next time I go, I've heard the patty melt is good. You wanted me to go into cardiac arrest right in the middle of the day with what you said, the chicken tender sandwich with all the stuff added and a Dr. Pepper milkshake.
Yes. Yeah,
that's like all my calories for the day, Shotgun. I was going to like roll over and die after that. But it was the burger. Days. The burger was good, very heavy, definitely big. The thing that struck me the most was how the medium drink was the size of my head. That was my favorite part. So
yes, I made the mistake of getting a medium shake, and I was like, I haven't had sugar in a long time. I don't know if I can drink this whole thing. And then I drank this whole thing quite easily.
The spicy ketchup is good. I said on Twitter that there are things that Whataburger does better than In-N-Out, but In-N-Out is still definitely better for me. If In-N-Out made their burgers the size of Whataburger and had spicy ketchup, then I would go to In-N-Out a lot more often than I already do. So,
well, let's get back to some baseball talk. For any newcomers to the podcast or to the baseball season, you know, USC doesn't have their access to their home field, Dado Field, so that'll be mentioned throughout this. But this podcast is about the baseball team, so let's get back to it. We're going to have on a special guest here in just a second with USC assistant coach Andy Jenkins joining us, but we have to recap what just happened. So, Jack, take us through this 1-4 week give us the highlights. USC starting, it was, we'll call it 1-4 since we last podcast. It's not really a week. Last week they went 0-4, starting with a loss to Michigan at LMU because, again, they do not have a home field. Before the trip to Texas, they play TCU, Texas A&M, TCU, lose all those games. And then they play Fullerton on Tuesday. We're recording on Wednesday. They did, were able to get a win there. But walk us through what happened this week in the action and what kind of stood out to you most from those games.
Yeah, I'll talk about the Michigan game first, kind of get that one out of the way. LMU, at least the setup at LMU, not quite as nice as Great Park, but it's closer, which I appreciated. I don't think USC played poorly in this game at all. Lost 8-5, but I think you look and you say USC was the better team. Pitching was a lot better outside of a grand slam given up by Mason Edwards, who cruised through the first inning, struck out all three batters swinging, then walked the first two guys on 3-2 counts. Michigan tried to sacrifice bunt, and it would just took Hedges too far off the bag. USC couldn't make the play, and then the grand slam. And at that point, it's like, okay, now it's 4-0. USC ended up outscoring Michigan the rest of the way, 5-4. But they just couldn't overcome that big inning in the second. So I think USC was the better team that day. I do think they're a better team than Michigan, but Michigan got the big hit when they needed, and that was enough to pick up the win. I think you had some highlights in that game. Garen Rizzo and Brock Blatter were really good. Rizzo, in his debut, went 2 innings, went 6 up, 6 down. I thought the bullpen pitched pretty well that day, and then Austin O'Vern hit his first home run of the year. So that was, even though it didn't have a huge impact on the game because USC was down to its last out and brought it within a 3-run game, but couldn't come back further than that. I think that was a positive, seeing Austin O'Vern have a good line drive swing, knock it out of the yard. And that's a little foreshadowing for the win against Fullerton on Monday.
Yeah. And this is the thing. You talk about how they look like the better team, but they're not finding ways to win. And that's because they're making these small mistakes over. And we'll see this throughout the week as we do this recap. But you walk the leadoff guy, you walk the guy behind him, and you can't fill a sack bunt. You're setting yourself up for failure. One hit and suddenly you're down 2-0. Instead, it was one big hit and you're down 4-0. And that's a big hole to dig out of, especially with the offense that's struggling the way it has this season. So those are the type of things, not fielding bunts, not making plays. The errors have been awful for them at times this season, and they're not helping themselves out with the amount of walks and stuff they have. So that was a great comment you had that just really – it's kind of poignant on what's been the issue for USC. And everyone asks, what's going on? I keep getting these tweets. How could this be? I thought they were turning things around. It's like, they played better baseball last year. They're not playing great baseball, which also tells me there's a chance they can turn it around because they just got to clean things up. It's not like they can't throw a strike ever. They have no talent at all. And they're just getting wally-mopped by everyone around here. They have talent. They're just not playing great baseball. And that then makes me go, how much of this is the fact that you're having to move practices all the time? The fact you're not in a regular routine. And those are things that you don't want to say. It's not an excuse. It's a fact of life. And you don't want it to be the blame. But you start going, how much is that to blame? And how do you overcome it when there's no solution? It's not like, okay, well, we're suddenly going to be back at home. You know, it's not like the Chicago Bulls, you know, their trip they have to make every year because the circus is in town or whatever it is. You know that you're going to be on this road over and over and over. How do you figure it out? And that's going to be the big question. That's something we'll talk about with Andy Jenkins as well.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Stankiewicz told us before the season that they still had the outfield at Dado, and so they were fielding ground balls on that. They built two little mini diamonds. Grass plays differently than actual dirt. So what's, you know, is there a little bit of a difference preparing for a season, taking, you know, ground balls on the outfield grass as opposed to when you've got a full stadium to do whatever you want? You never want to make excuses, and I know all the coaches will say that, but you do have to kind of at this point, with the way that they have started this season, think about how much this is coming into, should we take it into account? And I think we mentioned preseason. This might happen. You know, this team might be better than last year's team, but have a worse record because of all the extenuating circumstances. And I think you saw that against Michigan. I would also say you saw it against TCU on Friday. I mean, TCU is one of the best teams in the country, still undefeated. I think they won their 13th game today, which is the best start they have had in program history. TCU should have lost on Friday against USC. I do think USC was the better team that day. Yeah, they got a gift in the ninth inning, and I know that, you know, we'll talk about that. And you give one right back, and you just can't hold the lead. You walk eight out of the bullpen. Like, there's this these small things that USC was doing to lose the game when I do think overall looked like the better team on Friday. But because TCU did some of those little things well in the end after, I think, blowing the game, but then they were able to figure it out. USC blew the game and didn't figure it out. So I think overall USC probably should have won that game on Friday as well against TCU. They didn't, and that was the second straight loss.
And again, this is, you have to take advantage of mistakes. You got to cut out your own mistakes, and then you have to take advantage. And USC does that in the top of the ninth. They score three runs without a hit. TCU's closer, Benebelt, is one of the best lefties in the nation, but he couldn't throw a strike. He walked a guy, then he walked another guy. He got a couple outs in between. Now there's two outs, hits a guy. Wild pitch, scores a run, hits another guy, walks a run in, and suddenly they have to go to the bullpen and bring somebody else in. And then now you've been standing around as a defense for so long that you make an error defensively, and another run scores. So USC goes up by two runs, but then they just give it right back. It was just Jared Fikas comes in, opportunity to close the game out, and he didn't pitch bad, but he didn't field good, so he walked the leadoff hitter. There's your trouble right there. Starts with that. I know it's Peyton Tolley, and he's a dude in the middle of their lineup. He's going to hit 15, 20 bombs this year. Make him hit a bomb in a major league stadium before you walk him.
He had been up to that point in the season of their nine starting hitters. He objectively had the worst stats out of all nine. Like, I know he was a guy, but if you're going after anyone in the lineup with their numbers, you would have thought it would be him, considering that everyone else was just killing the ball that day and the rest of the season.
But you have a two-run lead. You have to know the situation, pitch to it. And, hey, if he rockets something somewhere, it's okay. His run does not matter in the grand scheme of it as long as you get those next three outs. And instead, you walk him. Then you get a ball right back to the pitcher, and he throws it away. And it just seems to snowball from there. They get an infield single, and then it's a ball. It just seems like it creeps through. And that's the kind of things that happen when you start off giving the walk. So I wanted to talk about that Friday one just because, they had their chances. They should have won that game to take advantage of the gift. And then even in the 10th inning, leadoff
single.
Well,
okay, we glossed over something because that game had no business getting to the 10th inning because TCU scored those two runs against USC to tie things back
up.
Great
point.
It's tied it. Had bases loaded, nobody out. Needed anything for a walk-off, just couldn't get three straight non-productive outs. USC's like, oh, Jared Fikas isn't getting it done. We got to bring in Josh Blum. And I'm sitting there up there, and I'm thinking, I feel bad because Josh Blum has to come in and give up this walk-off somehow. Even if he gets two outs, like, they could hit a single. He could strike the first guy out and then give up a sacrifice fly. This is an impossible situation to ask him to come and get three outs. And he strikes out the next three guys, and TCU doesn't score.
Punchy. It was last two on three pitches.
One of the most inspired pitching outings I've ever seen. He ended up going another inning, too. But for him to come in and do that, I think that's a silver lining because USC found its closer, and it should be Josh Blum. But that game had no business getting to the 10th inning, and USC did that. They had all that hype from scoring in the ninth and blowing it, but getting it right back because Josh Blum got him to the 10th. And then they couldn't score. It's just like this team right now is not building on its own performances during the game, from game to game. And I think that's been what has stuck out the most to me this year compared to last.
That is a great point. And because you mentioned building on their performance, you get that three straight punchies with the bases loaded. Are you kidding me? All the momentum comes back, even though you've blown this game. They blew it first. Now you blew it back. You have stolen back the momentum. And you get the leadoff guy on. Ryan Jackson then still second. You got a runner in scoring position with nobody out. Manufacture the run, right? And I think when he stole second, I think there's two strikes at that time. I can't remember off the top of my head. But JT Walden strikes out. Put the ball in play. You got to find a way. You're left-handed. Roll over a ball. Just put it in play. Roll it to the first baseman, the second baseman. Ryan Jackson now moves up third. The next guy, Takeuchi, hits a fly ball. He would have scored a run. And then Josh Blum's coming back out in the 10th. And he's going to do what he did again, two strikeouts and a flyout, five punchies, six batters, five punchies. That was pretty impressive by Josh Blum against a number four team in the nation, I think, TCU, undefeated. That was super impressive. So there are these small glimpses. But it's again that just what you talk about. You got to be able to build on that momentum, and they weren't able to. They weren't able to manufacture a run there. And then you see what happens in the bottom of the 11th. TCU does exactly that. Hit by pitch. What do? They take advantage. Sacrifice bunt. You walk somebody. They get a base hit. Game over. And like that, that's the difference right now in a TCU team that's finding ways to win, because they've been in a bunch of these games. They're undefeated, but they played several 1 and 2 run games. They are finding ways to win, and the confidence just builds on itself, whereas USC is finding ways not to win. And I think that that's why I wanted to bring up the Friday game so much, because it just is so emblematic of how this game, the season has gone so far for them. An opportunity to take a big time win and give you some confidence going into the rest of the weekend, instead, soul crushing defeat. And a big part of this, and a big part of their struggles this season, they have scored in 31 innings so far this year. I looked it up. I looked through all the box scores. They've scored in 31 innings. They have given up. They have shut down innings, right? You want to shut down innings. Come out. All right, we scored. Come out and shut things down. Did they do that in the bottom of the ninth? No. They let them tie. Because they've had 31 innings they've scored so far this season. They've given up runs in the next frame 17 times. So more than half the time when they score, they are immediately giving up a run. Now they may score two and they give up one. Sometimes they score two, they give up five. It's been different things. How many 1, 2, 3 innings do you think they've had so far this season after a score?
After a score. Because you asked, I'm going to go zero.
Four times. They have done it four times. But four out of 14 times that they've actually had shutdown innings have been 1, 2, 3. Like, that's when you take the momentum, you score, and you build upon it. All right, we come out, we shut you down. Now we're going to come back in. We're immediately back
in. Get the bats right back up. Yeah.
Exactly. The pressure is back on, and that's something they're not doing right now. Of their 14 shutdown innings where they didn't give up a run, six of those have featured the opponent getting a runner in scoring position. So, like, so eight times that you've scored so far this season, you've got guys out, relatively quickly. Maybe you got a guy on first. Only four times you've done it 1, 2, 3. Like that number, because I keep seeing, I was like, they scored the same thing against TCU. You saw it again later against TCU. They scored two early. They gave up five immediately. And then Cal State Fullerton, they really stood out. Every single time they scored, they would give up a run until the last time. And that was the difference in the game. Now, they did give it another runner in scoring position on that final one, but that's something that's really stood out to me, is they're not stopping these shut. They're not being able to get shut down innings, whether it's from their starters, whether it's from their relievers. When they score runs, they need to build on momentum. And baseball, it doesn't seem like it is, but baseball is very momentum driven, especially at the college level, especially when it comes to confidence and everything. And that's something that's not happening right now. And again, you can dissect it any way you want to psychologically and look at different things, and that the home field thing and all, it all comes down to, hey, can you build on what you're doing? And they're not doing that right now.
Yeah, I think if you were to ask me, and I've had some people ask me what's going on with the team, if you had asked me the one thing, if you were to sum up what is wrong with this team right now, I just think they're not playing complementary baseball. Mm-hmm. Like when the starting pitching pitches well, the bullpen will disappoint. I mean, Caden Aoki I thought his best start of the year on Friday, 5 innings, 1 earned run, but he gave up a couple more runs because the defense wasn't great and they were unearned. Then the bullpen walked 8 after he had walked 0 across the first 5 innings. So he puts USC in a position to win. The bullpen walks 8, blows the game in the 9th inning. We had times earlier in the year where we talked about pitching was actually pretty good. They struck out a lot of guys. Sure, they had some walks, but pitching did what they needed to do to win. But the offense would let them down. And you just haven't had a game where, outside of a couple, the pitching's been on and the offense has been on and the defense has been on. I think what you mentioned about the shutdown innings goes right to that as well. Hitting has a good inning. Pitching lets it down. Can't build on that. Can't play complementary baseball. And you can look at it from game to game. Two back-to-back wins against Portland. This is great. You come out against Michigan, home team, Big Ten preview. Let's show them what USC's made of. No, gave up a grand slam in the second inning because there were some walks and a defensive misplay and someone wasn't in the right spot. I just feel like this team, as opposed to last year, has really played less complimentary baseball, because I think this is one of the things that you would applaud last year's team on, where we mentioned maybe not the most talented bunch, but they work together. The pitching will get a shutdown inning, even if they allow someone in scoring position. They'll get the final out they need. And when there's two outs and the offense comes up and you need a tie or take the lead, someone's going to get that hit. And it just felt like everything was gelling as a team, where the defense would make a good play. That would lead to good offense, which would lead to good pitching. And I just don't think you've seen that from the group this year, because I don't think you can point out one game, at least from this past, you know, since the last time we've podcasted, the past five games, you cannot point out one game here where each of the three worked in tandem, the pitching and the offense and the defense. And that is hard for a baseball team, but even on the inner sides, where if you separate pitching into bullpen and starting, they're just often not working at the same level. And I think that is what has made the team struggle so much so far this year.
Let's move forward. Texas A&M game, you know, USC up three, up 1-0. Tyler Strasburg was pitching really well, kind of ran into a wall in the fifth inning. They got him for three runs. USC answers back, though, in the next inning, gets it to 3-2, but then the bullpen just falls apart. You know, the pressure of the situation, I think that's where you see the difference between having Garrett Clark and Kyle Wisch, who were veteran guys that had pitched before. Now, they hadn't had a ton of success leading into last season, but had had some success. Now you're throwing Brock Blatter in there. A talented guy is going to have success for USC. The guys that are having success, Xavier Martinez struggled, I think, his first outing, but it's been pretty good since then. He's got experience. And then you have Josh Blum. He's got experience. Now, Ficus should be a guy that has experience, and you expect a little bit more to him. And he's done well pretty much outside of that TCU game. But the guys with experience are the ones that are pitching better in the bullpen. The young guys who have talent, they're going through some growing pains. And we saw that for sure in that Texas A&M game. They scored two runs in the seventh, three in the eighth, one in the ninth. So it just kind of opens the game up. When you were right there, it was a 3-2 game going into the seventh inning. On Sunday, much different, as in TCU jumps out really early. They score, you know, they just beat up on Eric Hammond in the second inning, and got some concerns definitely with where Hammond's at right now. You know, they were big expectations for him from the coaching staff coming in. I think you were saying his velocity was a little bit down on Sunday as well, so that's a concern. The bullpen looked good after that for the most part. But, you know, when you get into a 6-2 hole to start the game, I did like the way the offense answered the first two innings. Hey, you go from, you know, you give up a run, but then you score two back in the first inning. You give up five, like, oh, woe is us. You know, we're going to get swept this weekend. It's going to be that. But they answer back and score two runs right there. So it becomes a 6-4 game. So you're right back in it. And then they just, you know, couldn't get the, you know, the right hits, the right time, all that type stuff. But it didn't help that their defense was terrible in that game once again. So, you know, that was disappointing. Jacob Galloway, another really nice game there. Then fast forward to Fullerton, get back, snap the losing streak, four losses from last week. They snapped the losing streak against Fullerton, though. And you saw a couple of positive signs. Chris Brown getting his first hit. You know, he was 0 for 15 or 16, I think, going into it. They expect him to be a guy in the middle of the lineup, so they need to get him some confidence. Austin O'Vern, first multi-hit game, including another home run. He's actually, I think that tweeted out the score. It was like he was 1 of 19 to start the season or something like that.
And he's reached base in
like, I think the last six games or seven games or something like that. So that's a positive for him. Now, some of those are walks, whatever, but you get him on base, that's big. And then Xavier Martinez, I thought, was really good. I thought when he came in, he really shut things down. And Blum in the ninth, striking out the side, that's usually a good way to go. So I think we've seen that Josh Blum has taken over as the premier arm in the back end. Now, he can use him as a closer, or is he going to be an inning stopper? There's a couple different ways you can go there. But I thought there were some positive things coming out of that Fullerton game going forward. What's your big takeaway from those last three games? Anything that really stood out to you from those?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be negative, but I think you do have to be a little bit concerned about Eric Hammond. And, you know, Andy Stanko has told us coming into the year that he was as encouraged by Hammond as anyone on the team, said he's a different guy. And I do wonder if something's up, because, you know, watching the radar gun on the scoreboard, some of his fastballs were 88, you know, 89. Some would hit 90. I think the highest he hit was 92. But this is a guy that, you know, before Tommy John surgery was in the mid-90s, and we were told he was back to that in the fall. And clearly that just hasn't been sustained into the spring. And so he's leaving some pitches up. They don't have the same zip on it, because maybe you can get away with a fastball in the zone if it's at 95 as opposed to at 88. The ones that are 88 maybe get hit around a little bit more, but, you know, gives up eight hits in an inning and 2/3, six earned runs. I just wonder if something is up there, and we'll see if any changes come. But I think right now you've got two horses in the front end of the rotation, and Aoki and Stromsburg, who, even though Stromsburg got beat up a bit in the fifth, like I think he showed he can go out there against a premier offense. He struck out seven Texas A&M batters in the first four innings. Like, you feel really good about where you're at with your first two starters in Aoki and Stromsburg, in whatever order they would ever need them to go. But then the next two are Hammond with an ERA above 11 and Mason Edwards, who started on midweeks, who's got an ERA over 10. So I think with the pitching at the back end of the starting rotation and that kind of middle to close to the setup role in the bullpen is something that USC really needs to focus on. But as you mentioned, Shotgun, a lot of silver linings. One who we haven't mentioned, but I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't talk about, Kaikeia Harrison, who's been just hitting the cover off of the ball. Against Texas A&M, he had four of the team's eight hits. I believe he had a two-hit game with a couple RBI against Michigan. Had a you know another couple hits against TCU on Sunday, I believe. He's been a big piece for USC. So first career hit for Deuce Robinson. Like there's a lot of silver linings to talk about with this team. But as Andy Stankiewicz said over the weekend, I think it's kind of the best way to wrap things up. It's hard to look at moral victories for this team right now, considering where the record is. They need to find a way to win the baseball games, because at the end of the day, when you look at the end of the season, it's the record that people will remember, not someone having their first hit or something like that.
Yeah, and you got to get guys going, though. I mean, guys that are supposed to be middle of the line of bats, just haven't done anything. Luca DiPaolo and Chris Brown are both right now 1 of 18. If you get those two guys going, or you get one of those guys going, it just makes the lineup deeper. That's the thing. We've seen a bunch of freshmen get opportunities because the returners are not, you know, not living up to the expectations from last year. So got to get those guys going. Carson Wells has started going a little bit. Austin O'Vern getting going a little bit. Unfortunately, USC appears to have lost one of their key pieces for at least a significant portion of time going forward. Bryce Martin, Grzelanik, was it the TCU game, I believe it was?
Or he was the tying run in the ninth inning on that wild pitch that allowed USC to tie the game in the ninth. I thought it was a head injury from just where I was watching, because he got slammed by a belt, the closer. Those two collided, because obviously both of them with the game on the line were putting everything out on the line. So I thought it was a head injury. Found out later in the weekend it was a wrist injury. And
So real quick, but watching the replay, you could actually see it. You know, you obviously were there, so you didn't get a chance. But when he dove in, his hand, basically his left hand, hit the ground and got stuck and pushed back into him instead of, you know, as a normal slide, because he dove in head first trying to score this run. Obviously, big situation. And that's a dangerous play for both, because if he goes in spikes first, then the way a belt was coming in there, he's going to get spiked right in the leg. He goes in head first, a belt, you know, takes the opportunity to try to attack the play and puts his knee basically right in his head. And like you said, it looked like it could have been bad that regard, but you could see him in the dugout really flexing his hand, and he got replaced right after that. And so they were looking at his hand wrist area, and sounds like we've got an update, you know, earlier that doesn't look good necessarily for him.
No, I was told that he had wrist surgery instead of going to practice on Tuesday morning. Not sure yet whether it's a season-ending injury, but you would assume with a wrist injury for what I was told was a broken bone somewhere in his wrist that it could be a significant amount of time.
Yeah, depending on the bone, it could be, you know, depending on if it's his forearm bone versus something in the wrist, then it could be a 4 to 6 week thing. You know, I've broken my wrist a couple times. So 4 to 6, 6 to 8 weeks on those, the healing process just there. But then with a wrist injury with baseball, it's the time that it takes to get your swing back, to then get strength back in your, all that type of stuff that comes with it. Because I remember when I, you know, the first couple times breaking my wrist in middle school, I think it was, or maybe it was early high school, but you go through and you get the cast on and everything. And now granted, he'll probably do some exercises to help strengthen it, but you get your cast off and you're like, why is my wrist so small? Like you just deteriorated away a little bit. So that'll take a little bit of time. So that's a big blow for USC, because he was expected to be a big significant portion for them up the middle, you know, potentially playing shortstop. You know, we've seen him at second base. We thought he might play some more shortstop, but then also in the middle of the lineup too. So USC will have to make some adjustments there. And we've seen Aubrey Covarrubias, you know, playing different spots. We've seen the freshman, Dean Carpentier.
Kevin Takeuchi's played some second too.
Yeah, he's played some second. Carpentier has played third base. So there's different, some options, definitely some options there. So it's not like there's no one at all to play. But it is definitely a concern for USC that you lose a piece that you expected to be a big contributor for them, at least for probably a significant portion of the season, if not the entire season.
And it'll be interesting to see. This is the situation that we talked about with Andy Stankiewicz and Travis Jewett before the year, where maybe some games you have to make some defensive adjustments. And they said, you know, God forbid someone gets hurt, we've got versatile guys. There's no question that Shotgun right now, they've got a lot of versatile players. They can mix and match. The question is who's going to hit, who's going to make sure that they feel the ball. Because if you're having a bunch of bats fighting around for spots on defense, you'll figure that out. But right now, they've got a bunch of guys that they can slot in at a bunch of spots on defense. They're just trying to find the nine that can hit consistently right now. And that has been a struggle so far through the first 12 games.
And some guys that can make some plays on defense, because
that is true.
Their defense is not being very good either. With that, we're going to take our break, and then Jack and I will return with our special guest for the week, Andy Jenkins, assistant coach for USC, is going to come and join us, and then we'll take a look forward at this week's schedule for USC.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back from the break. Make sure to check out our sponsors. Also, please like, subscribe, and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, if you have any questions, comments, requests, you can send them in at podcast@uscfootball.com. Jack, we got another question this week. We'll get to that a little bit later. Just make sure you put Dado Download or Baseball Pod in the headline to make sure it gets directed to Jack and I. You can also request someone to be a future guest on the show. We have a special guest today. We now welcome in our guest this week, USC assistant coach Andy Jenkins, who was elevated from the volunteer assistant to the third paid assistant this offseason. Huge move, huge news in the NCAA that was allowed. We'll talk to him about that. Also got to talk to him about the team and how they're off to a slow start. But we've seen some other teams in the past get off to slow starts and be able to figure things out. Can the Trojans be one of those teams? We got to ask Andy about that. Andy, thanks for taking the time to join us on the Dado Download podcast.
My pleasure. Great to be here, guys.
Well, we got to start with where the Trojans are right now. 3-9 start. Now, obviously, you guys have played much tougher competition than maybe you played in the past, or even last year. You know, you didn't start with Marist this season. You go on the road playing in the MLB Desert Invitational. You go to Texas playing three top 10 games against two top 10 teams. So much tougher road to begin with. But still, you look at the record and you go, whew, what's going on with the Trojans right now? And I got people in my DMs and my Twitter mentions, just as much as I'm sure you guys are hearing it as well. What's been the biggest takeaway so far seeing this team start 3-9? Is it something that's correctable, or is this a season that could be a concern going forward?
Yeah, no, great question. Something that's on our mind. You know, we lose sleep. We're coaches. We understand, you know, what the job is to be a USC baseball coach and the legacy here. It's been very disappointing. It's been very frustrating. We had some momentum last year. We played some great baseball, particularly like just with a roster that was a little bit unknown to us and Coach Stankiewicz. I do think it's fixable. I do think it's fixable. I think, like, if I go back to my career as a coach and maybe Coach Jewett and Stankiewicz, you always have that point in the year where it's like, man, you're trying, you know, you go somewhere, you get swept, you lost four, you lost five. I've been in some programs where it's been lose eight or nine, and then you kind of come back out of it. But I'm not sure I've ever like started a season like this, you know, where the anticipation of the hype of the season and the off season, you know, and so that's been disappointing. But I think we got some young guys still. I know we were young last year. I think when there's expectations, there's greater expectations for the coaches and the program and the players. And, you know, I think there's a lot of talent. We have more guys on our roster this year. We have more depth figuring out who to play. And to be honest, like just some of the guys that are returning that felt some of that success last year, we need them to show up, you know, and they haven't. And some have, most of them haven't. And I think, you know, the program right now is to get them going and keep working and keep stacking days and keep laying bricks, as Coach Stankiewicz says. I do believe there's better days ahead, but very disappointing start. But I think, you know, you got to work from here and you got to move on. So a lot of things going on, but we certainly had a good practice today. You know, we snuck out a good win last night. Anytime a win after some losses is just a great feeling. And, you know, we look forward to what's ahead against Arizona this weekend, starting Pac-12 play.
Andy, thank you for joining the show. I'm curious, last year when you guys went through some of the struggles, of course, it wasn't at the beginning of the year, it was sometime in the middle. Was your approach as a coaching staff to lay off a bit and let things correct themselves? Or did you guys get in there and try and do the work to turn things around? And what kind of approach have you guys thought about taking this year with what is a similar but different group?
Yeah, I think anytime you struggle, it's not just, hey, we're struggling and it's just going to get better because that's the luck of the game and you just got to show up and play. It goes with the work. It goes with the reps. It goes with the quality bullpens. It goes with the quality swings in the cage, on the field. Talking the mindset with the players. No problems are fixed without hard work. And I think that's what we believe. And we believe we work hard. But sometimes the game of baseball will eat you up. It does not care about your feelings. I think people know that. And this staff is coached a long time. Some of us have played a long time, and it's eating us up a little bit right now. And I think we know that the tide can turn. As you just mentioned, last year in the middle of the year, I think we did lose. I don't know if it was 7 or 8, 9 in a row. It felt like it at one point. But then, you know, we came out of that and I think we won 10, 11, 12 in a row, you know, and then finished pretty good. And obviously short in the eyes of the NCAA and that stuff. But this game's crazy, man. We were not talented enough and we're not polished enough to just go out there and, you know, go 40-16 right now. It's just not the reality of our program, but we should feel, and we do work towards every time we go out, no matter who we're playing, we feel like we can win if we play the right game. And it's not against TCU. It's not against BYU. It's not against Portland. It's against the game, right? You throw strikes, you field your position, you play catch, you put the ball hard in play, and you challenge the defense. And we just haven't done that, you know, early enough in all cylinders. It's been light with the bats. It's been moments with the pitching and then sometimes, you know, stagnant with the defense. And we know we're capable of playing better ball. And you know, each day, each night, each meeting, each discussion, each text with the staff, we're not giving in, man. And we're gonna fight like hell to turn the ship around. And that's what's going on right now after a tough start.
You've been a part of an Oregon State program as a player that kind of took that step, you know, and that was kind of the question with this group is, can they get back on track? Obviously, USC has the national championship and 12 national championships, a record, you know, far surpassing anyone else. But that's a long time ago now. That's, you know, almost 30 years ago since the last one. So this, you know, this program hasn't had success. When you were at Oregon State, how were you guys able to take those steps to move from, you know, a contender in the Pac-12 to move your way up to making the first College World Series? And I think, you know, a near half century when you were there, your final year, you know, how did you guys make those strides? And what do you kind of take away that maybe you can see in this group that's trying to build this program up since you guys took over with Andy Stankiewicz?
Yeah, for sure. It's a beautiful process, you know, to how, you know, programs are built and then rebuilt. And I think at Oregon State, I personally went to Oregon State because it was in a great conference. I truly didn't go because of Pat Casey at the time. My brother was playing football. I wanted to play against Arizona State and Stanford and, you know, the teams that at the time were a Northwest kid's dream. And, you know, I got there and you know, after 1 year realizing we were okay, we just kind of missed the postseason. And then, you know, Coach Casey was in his 10th, 11th, 9th. I don't know exactly what it was, but there wasn't a surgence about Oregon State. I knew he was competitive. I knew he was a great baseball guy, former player. I thought he had a good staff. Corvallis is a great campus. But we got a group of men that were willing to risk it all to change that. You know, and it came from talent and Jacoby Ellsbury and Darwin Barty and Kevin Gunderson as younger guys, Jonah Nickerson. And then for me, honestly, I just wanted to be a leader. I wanted to be a guy that I didn't know if I was going to play pro ball the next year. I knew scouts liked me, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a stand and get in this leadership deal. And I did that. Guys appreciated it, recognized it. And then, you know, by God's will, I actually balled out that year too. So both worlds kind of combined, you know, and then next thing you know, Oregon State's going to the World Series since 52 years, you know, for the first time. And, you know, if anybody will tell you what's happened since then, I think you can tell with the way they're going now and what it's been, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, College World Series appearances, 3 national championships. But I think Coach Casey kind of could step back and be like, you know, I'm not so competitive to try to figure out and challenge these guys. I can kind of get a group of kids that are like-minded that kind of can coach themselves and the players kind of run the locker room and run practice. And, you know, that's what any program's searching for. You know, you don't want to go tell every kid what to do at his at-bat. You don't want to tell every kid how to pitch his bullpen or throw in the game. And you want them to go out and take ownership and, you know, leadership is a big part of creating a big program. And a lot of times it doesn't come from the head coach. It comes from, you know, the young men on the field. And I think we created kind of a bond and a template for Coach Casey to be like, okay, this is what we need to do. This is how we do it. And we're going to continue to do it. And obviously Coach Dato and Coach Gillespie, and there's been some fine seasons at USC. You know, I'm enamored by historic programs. If you look at my track record, I just love history. I love old school nostalgic baseball and great coaches. And one of the reasons why I came to USC was because I knew Coach Stankiewicz had a reputation, and I knew Coach Jewett from some Northwest ties and some friends in the industry. And obviously bring on Coach Seth Etherton, and we're real proud of our staff. But you know, we got to get the players motivated, right? We got to get them to do the things that we know how to do. And I think that's the challenge right now. I think we did a pretty good job last year, and a lot of people would get excited about that. But right now, you know, we're working to come off of a tough season.
You guys have a group at SC that last year, as players, wanted to get the respect back for the program that you just mentioned you were enamored with. And you know, I think they were successful in doing that last year, and expectations, of course, come with that. And we talked with Coach Stankiewicz before the season about how he handled expectations. But for a group that looked to live up to those expectations this season and maybe isn't on track to do so, at least through the first 12 games, how have you seen them handle it? And what do you feel like the mental state is right now for a group that has maybe seen a letdown through the first 12 games?
Yeah, you know, you see foggy times, right? You see them go to the breakfast table, you know, at a nice hotel on the road in Texas at a great environment. And you kind of just see some defeated guys. You know, you see some guys that were capable. You see some guys that did it last year, hit highly, you know, high prospects, big anticipation for what they could be in maybe the MLB. And then you see a lot of freshmen coming into our program that watched us from afar, you know, and I think you know, it's not a letdown on their part. It's not a letdown on our part. We just need to get with them. They need to get with us. Hopefully everybody has our back and knows that, like I said before, this game does not care about your feelings. And I think a little bit of the expectations, a little bit of maybe some of the things you guys might allude to or have alluded to of just the bouncing around and no field. That's truth, man. It really is. And it's no excuse. And this staff is not going to lay it on it. You know, if anybody knows anything about Coach Stankiewicz, that guy's gritty, man. And he doesn't care if we're in a city park, on a concrete field, or wherever we are. He's a guy that's going to, you know, we're going to work on the things we need to work on, and we're going to do it right. And so far we haven't done it enough, you know? And so, like I said, this morning, we had a great practice. We were going to have a great practice tomorrow. We're going to get on the recruiting trail and continue to do what USC needs to do and identify great players in Los Angeles. And then tomorrow we're going to show up at the Great Park, which is our home field right now. You know, we spent one weekend there and did okay against Portland. And those guys have done a good job getting the facility ready for us. And they're going to get ready for Arizona coming in and try to turn the tide. And that's the focus. That's the goal moving forward.
What do you see as your role on this coaching staff when it comes to building confidence? You know, a lot of times the best coaching staffs, in my opinion, are well-versed. So, you know, whether it be a football staff, basketball, baseball, it doesn't matter. It's you got a guy that can scream and break guys down, but you also got someone else that builds them up. And you have those different roles, and maybe it's different for each player. But, you know, what do you see as your role when you're trying to help those guys? Because baseball is such a confidence-driven sport, to help build that confidence up when you see guys at that nice hotel. I guess apparently you guys aren't getting those wet eggs that you normally get on road trips from the cheap hotels. But, you know, when you're at the nice hotel and you see guys with their head down a little bit, how do you guys try to build them up? What do you see as your role?
Yeah, for sure. I think if there's one thing I do have in my coaching backpack is I've coached for some, you know, hard-nosed coaches. Oh, Pat Casey, Rick Vanderhook, Lindsey Meigs, and Stank's really no different. You know, maybe you think he's lighter, maybe he's a little bit more, but he's not. You know, they want to win. They're competitive. Everything's important. Everything, you know, and when there's a tough time, there's a challenge, and these kids get challenged. And I think sometimes for me or any good coaching staff, if you just want to act like the head coach and challenge them with them, it can be intimidating for some of these guys sometimes. And so for me, I think I've always done a really good job of just being like, hey, man, you know, understand, you know, the message, not the tone. This is what he's trying to tell you. Just a little bit of a double of clarity. You know, Travis Jewett's the hitting coach right now. I work with him. I agree with everything he does. We're not hitting well. I try to help him. I try to help our guys understand him more. I coach the catchers. I recruit. I just think being a voice and just being kind of a spark plug and maybe a good positive life force for whatever's not going good at the time, you know, and I think, you know, that's what a good assistant does. They believe in their assistants. They believe in their players. And I just think, you know, me being pissy or me being mopey or me being just down and out, isn't going to help this club. And, you know, so I personally try my best to help Stank, help Jew, help Seth, help Serge. And then ultimately what the most important thing is, you know, get in the cage and work with these guys, man. Talk about approach, talk about, you know, maybe not so much the swing, maybe not so much, the ground ball, but like, what's your mindset like, you know, how you feeling about yourself? Confidence breeds excellence in baseball and in most departments. You know, you could have the greatest swing in the world, but you can't hit. You know, we have a little message and it's a baseball term, but you know, you look like Tarzan, you play like Jane. You know, we want to play like Tarzan and look like Tarzan, you know? And I think that's the message to our guys a little bit. You know, if you look at our roster right now and you look at some of the guys we've been playing lately, it's a lot of freshmen. Do we want to do that? I'm not sure. But some of those guys that are sophomores and juniors and transfers coming in that have a little bit of experience, we need them to step up and we need them to understand that, you know, just because you're at USC and maybe you're at a different school or maybe there's expectations this year, you need to go out and kind of remember what you did last year. Remember what got you to SC and put yourself in a positive mindset. And, you know, I think we are coming to that. But it's been a rough couple moments and some games of disappointment, some games we've had, some games that I truly believe we were better than the other team. But we didn't play as confident. We didn't play as efficient. And you know, you guys have been around the game enough, like, anybody will beat you at any point. And Coach almost says it every time we speak at the end. You got Trojans across your chest. Everybody wants a piece of you, whether you're good or bad, man. And that's the truth. And that really is the truth.
One sophomore that you guys do have that's been stepping up, and I know you work with him closely with your work with the catchers, is Jacob Galloway. And you've worked with a lot of great catchers over the years, including Adley Rutschman, who, for my money, would be the best catcher in baseball right now. What traits do you see in Jacob Galloway that make you think that he could potentially have a future at the next level? And what do you think has made him so successful this season?
Yeah, he's a baseball player first, right? You know, you take the talent of Adley, you take the talent of guys that maybe I've coached or people have coached, and you always talk about, well, he can hit really far, or he's got great hand-eye coordination, you know, or he can really run, or he can really receive, whatever aspect of it. You know, Jacob, he wants to be great. You know, he when we preach something in practice, whether it's a bat path or a, you know, an offensive situation, or just being in tune to the situation defensively or the weight room, he's in it, man. He's sold and he's bought in. And you know, the guy came in gifted. He came in with, you know, exceptional hands, exceptional blocking ability. He's smaller, right? So the biggest thing with him right now is, you know, we want you to catch all the time, right? We want you to be our guy. But get in the cold tub. He has to promise me tomorrow that, you know, before we go to the Great Park for practice, he's got to get in that cold tub. And I said, I'm as sissy as you are, man. But, you know, if you want to be great and you want to be an MLB player, and, you know, you got to, you know, after weights, when you're doing nothing at night, you need to go in the weight room and pump the forearms and drink the protein and do stuff like that. And so Jacob wants it. He's kind of our leader right now. He's our emerging leader right now, I would say. One, by his play. But two, I think he's frustrated with not winning. And I think catchers can go out and catch fine and get crushed, you know, and be a prospect. But I don't care how great you caught. If we lost 9-1, you didn't catch good enough. You know, and just getting our catchers to take pride in our job is to make sure the team wins. And our job is to make sure that when we practice, we run practice. When catchers are there and we're doing anything defensively or situationally, we're going to dictate the pace. We're going to dictate the control. And if it's not going good, we're going to like make sure that it gets going. You know, so just that leadership thing that he's emerging into. But a great young ball player that's got a great future ahead and a bright spot of our team right now.
It was interesting when you came in, you basically had a blank slate of catchers, you know, because basically all the catchers left or were graduating. So you guys were able to recruit some guys coming in, both from the transfer portal and having Galloway come in. So it made for an interesting dynamic. And to see him emerge has been really fun, especially the way he's been hitting this year. But I want to talk about your path as well. You know, I mentioned in the intro that the NCAA had changed a rule this offseason, something that in college baseball we've been clamoring for a while, is a third paid assistant. And by that, I mean, there's been a pitching coach, there's been a hitting coach, basically, and the head coach, and no one else got paid on staff. So your previous job last year, you were the volunteer assistant, which means you don't get paid any money necessarily from, you know, from being a coach on the field. And there's also the limitations as far as recruiting and being able to do certain things off the field and whatnot. They changed that rule. So how has life changed now? One, that you can get paid. Congratulations. That's always a positive for anyone. But how has life changed now for you outside of the money, just being the difference in now being a paid assistant on the staff and being able to do some of the other things? Like you mentioned, being on the road recruiting. We were able to get you tonight because of some rainouts in the L.A. area because you were going out to see some games and whatnot.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. It hasn't changed at all besides the fact that I can go out and recruit in the spring. It just hasn't. I've been a full-time assistant. I've been paid, you know, a nice salary, I guess, for a college baseball coach. I do have a family. You know, that's something that, you know, you as a baseball coach, you have to consider. You know, I have kids. I have a wife. I have a, you know, baseball is not exactly who I am and all I am. I'm a father. I'm a brother. I'm a son. I'm all those things that might seem cliche, but in the grand scheme of the title of the change, not a lot, man. You know, I'm still the catching coach. I think Stank still looks to me to make a difference, you know, and the coaches to work with them and try to bring USC to relevance again. And when I say relevance, I mean, you know, back to the postseason and back to, you know, a top 25 and a perennial top 10 program. And that's not like just a wish. That's the goal. And coach talks about it all the time. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier about Oregon State, I was a part of building something that has changed people's lives in the city of Corvallis, that have changed lives in, you know, college baseball and what people talk about, and kids out recruiting want to go there. And nobody ever thought that would happen. You know, how cool would it be to bring USC back to the College World Series? How cool would it be to bring, you know, the alumni that are so great, so proudful, so accomplished, to be like, hey man, that staff got them back. And really that's the goal. Awesome end of development. You know, there's maybe some other jobs that I could have took, you know, I guess that were, you know, not what I want. You know, I want to go somewhere where you can be the best in the country. I want to coach the best in the country. I want to recruit the best in the country. And, sometimes maybe to a fault, I you know, kind of go down that path, but my wife's super supportive, maybe more supportive than I deserve. My kids are big fans of what I do. Some of them don't even know what I do because they're just crawling around and running around. But this game has brought me a lot. I'm super competitive, you know. And like I said, man, when you've coached under Pat Casey and Rick Vanderhook and, you know, Lindsey Meggs, you know, like them, don't like them, they all have a similar, you know, concept about them, and they're relentless competitors. And I think I'm that. And I don't think I'm exactly who they are, but maybe a new school version of them. You got the competitiveness, but you also love the kids. And they, not that they don't love the kids, but, you know, the landscape changes sometimes. And if you're not, you know, equipped to change with them, then you're going to be in trouble.
Well, if recruiting is the one really new thing that you're allowed to do this year, I'll ask a question about that. You mentioned that you don't feel like the team right now is at least, you know, talented enough to just walk into a 40-win season. But you guys face two teams over the weekend that are in the top 10 and have been consistently good for the last couple of years and have a lot of talent, some including from California. So I'm curious, what do you think USC needs to do to get to that level? And what would your pitch be to people who play in California about why they should come play at USC?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm not saying we can't win 40 games. Obviously, last year, I don't know if it was 32 or 34. I can't remember. But, you know, we weren't far with that. And I think what it takes to be able to do that is, you know, recruiting, right? Recruiting and getting talent, right? You need not just two arms. You need seven arms. You need, you know, and then the back six need to be like guys that are like, whoa, what? Look what he can do in a year with the development of Seth Etherton and Coach Stankiewicz and just what we do and our mantra. And then on the offensive side, we play a lot of, you know, I kind of call it a little stank ball. You know, we bunt, we run, we try to apply pressure. Is that who Stank is all the time? But I think if he had a bunch of guys that were hitting homers, driving in runs, you know, really just producing at the plate, I think he's the type of coach that will sit back and be like, okay, maybe we don't need to do this as much, and we can score and sit back maybe more to the East Coast SEC and some of those guys that we played this weekend. And I know the coaches that we played this weekend, they were on the West Coast. They did bunt a lot. You know, they did play that game, but they have some horses maybe that you know, maybe they don't feel that they need to do that anymore. And so each year is a new year. Right now, we have a lot more players. We have a lot more depth. But I think trying to find the right nine, right 12 that are going to be good for us in 2024, and it's no disrespect to the guys that aren't ready, because development is a big piece of this, right? You know, some guys emerge as juniors and sophomores. But right now, we need young guys to step up. We need the sophomores and juniors exceptionally to step up. And then, you know, our old guys need to take a little ownership and leadership of what we're doing. And if you're in Southern California, you got a brand new stadium coming in 2025. It's going to be off the charts. The resources at USC are unbelievable. You know, in the meantime, yeah, we got to play here and coach there and practice over there. But if you want to be a better baseball player and you want to be a better hitter, better infielder, you know, learn to be a young man, We have the staff, I think, to teach you how to do that. And the fluff and the stuff and the experience of what a lot of people have is common. It's just, unfortunately, right now, we have a little timetable that's up against us, and we're trying to make the best of it.
A little bit of adversity right now. As I mentioned, you played at Oregon State. That place was not built with diamonds and everything else. That place is super gritty, as you guys were able to build it, and it's a nice facility now, but you get the fan support and all that. I do want to point out that in 2005, when you guys made it to the College World Series, who'd you guys beat in the Super Regional?
Man, it's so funny because nobody remembers it here. We have one guy on our staff, and it's our trainer, Paul Diaz. And we joke all the time, and you know, I know the coaches know because we've talked about it, and some of the players, you know, maybe have found out. I know there's a group chat last year where somebody sent an article about that game or what I hit for the cycle or whatever. But USC is huge, man. They just want to win year to year. I don't think they remember the hard times of 2025 or 2005 coming to Oregon State. They chipped their their chest out on the 12 national championships. But Paul Diaz was a trainer, and he's our trainer. And he has some shirts from 2005. And I've met a couple of alumni that were on that team. One guy that, you know, he said I hit a home run off him. And, he's a coach actually in college baseball. So, kind of a cool thing. kind of not a cool thing, I guess, at the same time. But, Coach Gillespie obviously was a great coach at that time, and they came into Corvallis, got the best of them with Ian Kennedy and Jeff Clement and some great players. And then we got a little bit of Gillespie actually in 2014 when we were the number one national seed going into the postseason, and he brought the Anteaters into Corvallis and beat us, and knocked us out. So a lot of respect to him. A lot of alumni that I talk to, just say, hey, this feeling of your staff and the type of ball you're playing is a feel of Gillespie. And, I know Stank appreciates that. And we all have a lot of respect for him and what he's done. And, Coach Dato and just everybody in between. I don't want to short anybody out, but, it's a great program. It's a great program that deserves more. And we're trying our darnest, man, to get it where it needs to be.
Well, we look forward to seeing if you guys can turn it around. I did want to mention that 2014 UC Irvine team you mentioned, they finished the regular season 1-8. They lost their last six games, still made it into the tournament, and then they came up there and, put everything together. So we're looking to see if you guys can turn things around. Also, that first national championship game at Oregon State, 3-8 stretch. You guys are 3-9 right now. Who's to say you guys can't turn things around? So that's what we're looking forward to seeing if what you guys can do. And, it starts this weekend when you play Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the goal, man. That's the plan. That's when I lay my head down at night. I don't know if my wife likes it enough because she wants to watch shows and do her thing. But I just sometimes you can't turn it off. And that's the problem with the job and sometimes. But as Coach said to one of our players, the sun comes up tomorrow. I think we have the right leader to understand what we need to do. And our coaches are relentless. And I think we have guys that are relentless, but we just need more out of them. We need to, get them on a belief level that we can do this. Because a lot of them have, and you can call it an overachieving effect and a placebo when you have no expectations, but I don't buy into that. And I do believe in luck, but luck comes from preparation. And that's all we can do is just be prepared to do what we need to do this weekend on Friday night at 6:30 at the Great Park against Arizona. And we'll go from there.
Well, we look forward to seeing how it plays out and how things go forward. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us on the Dato Download podcast and look forward to having you again later in the season.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Bye, Don.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're now going to move forward and look at what USC has this upcoming week. But first, we got to see where they're at in the present. We've done the past. Now we're going to be the present. Then we'll do the future. Presently, where do they stand, Jack? At 3-9 overall, we got some key stats to kind of stand out. What catches your eye the most about where USC is at currently in the statistical rankings nationally?
Yeah, I think you have to look at batting average first. This is at one point going into the Portland series, I believe after they were shut out on Friday, they had the third worst batting average in the country. So things have improved a little bit, but still, 268th out of 295 ranked teams, hitting just .216 as a team. USC played TCU and Texas A&M over the weekend, and we've talked about it. Both of those teams had team OPSs that were well over 1,000, which is you'll win the MVP in the major leagues if you have an individual OPS over 1,000. So the fact that they were doing that as a team is pretty ridiculous, and USC's was somewhere in the 600s for most of the weekend. Like, that is just the big difference that the Trojans have right now on the offensive side compared to the top programs that they're aspiring to be like. That is the main thing that has stuck out to me, at least through the first couple games.
Yeah, it's been super surprising that they're currently sitting, because outside of Jacob Galloway, and Carson Wells is starting to come on a little bit. He's up at 233, which is up. That's what tells you something. And Kakea Harrison, I always struggle with it. When there's two capital letters in a name, it throws me off. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. He's batting .450, and he did all that damage this past week, got into the starting lineup, and has made the most of it. That's what you're looking for. But when you look at it, they have seven guys that are above the cut line when it comes to the stat sheet, which means, hey, you're a regular player, that are batting below the Mendoza line, which, if you don't know, is 200. They're below 200. Now, a couple of those guys, Covarrubias, Austin O'Vern, they're actually getting on base some. They both have on-base percentages that are over 100 points higher than their average. But still, you're hitting below 200. And it's guys that you were expecting. Now, if Covarrubias is doing that, and Takauchi, like, that, you didn't have that big expectation for them coming in. But returners that have had success, Austin O'Vern currently at 182, Ethan Hedges at 179, Ryan Jackson at 190. Ryan Jackson hit like 340 2 years ago at Nevada. Like, that's what I'm expecting from Ryan Jackson. It just hasn't started that way for Austin O'Vern, for Carson Wells, for any of these guys that have been regulars. Bryce Martin, Grzelanik, even before the injury, batting 148. Like, those guys are, the expectation was for them to carry the load. And those youngsters, hey, you throw them in at the bottom of the lineup and they do something, great, that's cool. But unfortunately, that's led to USC averaging 4.2 runs per game, which is number 273 in the nation. Jack, I don't know if you know this or not, but there are 295 Division I college baseball teams currently. So 273 out of 295 is not very good. USC is also in the 200s in hits, home runs, on-base percentage, runs, slugging, and by proxy, they're in the 200s in the win-loss percentage of the nation. So they're not doing well hitting the ball, and therefore they're not winning many games. They're also 209 in fielding. That's definitely, and I know Covarrubias has been a big part of this. He's really struggled. Now they've bounced him around to different spots and whatnot, but he's really struggled. He's got eight of USC's errors, eight of their 18. So that's something they've got to get figured out. But I think the fielding will be okay. The hitting is definitely a concern. Travis Jute will get it turned around with someone. Now he's got to find someone on this roster that can do it. Now the pitching hasn't been great, hovering around the mid-hundreds, except for strikeouts per nine. They're striking guys out, so they can get themselves out of some big jams, but they're putting themselves in a lot too many jams because they're averaging 5.5 walks. That's the big one that stands out to me as far as the pitching staff, is the 5.5 walks. When last year, I think it was, what, 3.5, somewhere between 3.5 and 4?
It was 3.7 last year. Now it's 5.5 walks a game this year. 8 strikeouts a game last year, and 11 and a fourth, 11 and a quarter strikeouts per game this year. if you're a coach, you probably would rather have the 8 strikeouts compared to the 3.7 walks than the 11 and a quarter strikeouts per game than the 5.5 walks, because, you know, I don't know what the, you know, the exact correlation would be for most coaches when it comes to how many walks we're okay with to how many strikeouts we would need to be okay with those walks. But 5.5 walks a game, no matter how many people you strike out, is a problem. You mentioned shotgun only scoring 4.2 runs a game. USC led the Pac-12 with a 4.39 ERA last year. If it scored 4.2 runs a game every game and gave up 4.39 runs a game every game, USC would lose every single game with the best Pac-12 ERA last year. So it just, that puts into context, they're not scoring enough runs. Obviously, we mentioned hitting .216, not hitting the ball well enough. I know batting average isn't the end-all be-all stat, and it shouldn't be. You need to hit better than .216, especially in college baseball. And when you had all four of your 300 hitters coming back last year, one of them in Jacob Galloway is hitting above 300, but the other three are hitting below 200. That is a problem. You don't want to put all the pressure on some of these sophomores to carry the team. But coming into the year, you're looking to those guys, as well as a Ryan Jackson, you know, some of these other transfers from past years as well as this year. But those four, when it's Galloway, Overn, Hedges, and Martin Grudzielanek, who we mentioned is now hurt, like those four were supposed to be the sophomores that were going to pace this lineup. Galloway has carried his end. Overn is picking things up. Hedges has had his moments. And of course, Martin Grudzielanek now injured. But those were supposed to be the horses in the lineup, and they're not hitting, which means USC's had to turn to other areas, and those guys haven't exactly hit for the most part. You're just going to need to find some more Kaikeia Harrisons and Jacob Galloways as the season goes on, because whoever steps up and is going to hit is going to find their way into the lineup. And I think you've seen Andy Stankiewicz, whether it's on the pitching side or the hitting side, not grasping for straws, but giving a lot of opportunities out, trying a lot of things. He's had some short leashes with pitchers. He's made some quick moves. He's changed the lineup around a lot, moving over and from number one to number nine to number eight to number seven to allowing some freshmen to play. Some has stuck. And I think right now he is throwing a lot of options out there and trying to see who sticks. And we will see as the season goes on, but that's kind of the mentality that the coaching staff seems to be in right now. That is a dangerous spot to be going into Pac-12 play, where you'll start the Pac-12 season with Arizona, a team that was good in the conference last year and made the tournament over USC. But if you're going into Pac-12 play and you still don't know what you have as a team and you are throwing options out there left and right, you're setting yourselves up for what could not be a very pretty Pac-12 season.
And I did want to mention, USC's off to a slow start, right? As I mentioned in our conversation with Andy Jenkins, that the 2007 Oregon State team had a 3-8 stretch. They won a national championship. 2014 UC Irvine team finished regular season 1-8. They lost their last six games, made it to the College World Series. How about your national championship 2 years ago? Ole Miss, they went 3-9, the exact record that USC is at right now. They had a 3-9 stretch. They won the national championship. Oregon last year went 1-8 right before the Pac-12 tournament. They made it to Super Regionals and should have made it to the College World Series. They didn't blow a game. So it can be done. Now, usually it's not the starting games, because normally there's some underbelly of your schedule is part of your couple first weeks. USC didn't really have that. I mean, you call Portland the underbelly, but Portland's going to be a good team. I think they'll compete in the WCC along with Santa Clara and San Diego for a title. So I think it's a tough schedule. Now, can you grow from it? That's the big question. Can you grow from it? If you go into conference play and you turn things around, you figure things out now, whatever it takes to be that catalyst that turns things around, USC could still end up making the NCAA tournament this year. Now, some people have tried to tell me that the season was over after the first weekend. One guy on Twitter, I just had to mute him because he just kept every game that they lost. What about now? What about now? What about, I've seen this happen with teams before, so I'm not going to give up on a team after, at that time, six games or eight games. Now, if they don't turn around now, starting in conference play, yeah, the season will be over real quick. You have lost all your leeway. You've lost all your cushion. You've lost all your mulligans. You have to start playing now. And can USC suddenly turn things on? Yes, Arizona is beatable. Yes, Cal Baptist next week is beatable. Yes, playing at Stanford is beatable. I just saw them lose 2-3 to Penn State. Now they're playing better. Arizona is playing a little bit better. They lost 5-6. We'll talk about that in just a second. They lost 5-6 and then won a top 25 game. They played three top 25 teams over the weekend. But those are winnable games, especially at home for USC, home in quotes, in air quotes, against Arizona. And then you go to Stanford, and there's no home field advantage at Stanford besides the fact that there's tons of foul territory. It's not like there's a ton of fans for a regular season conference series against USC, and they have a really young team. You could go on a run right here and suddenly reel off six or seven in a row and set yourself up going into a week where you play at Long Beach State, who's off to a great start, and you play at UCLA in the rivalry series. Like, and then suddenly things are back on track a little bit. You know, if you went, say they were to win seven in a row, you know, I've seen crazier things happen. Then now you're 10-9, you're back above 500, and you would say, oh, that's not a great start to the season, but you say you can build from that and you can turn things around. So I'm not ready to give up on the season overall. Let's move to the preview section. We got to get this podcast over. Jack's got to, it's past his bedtime, guys. You know, he's got to get tucked in by mommy. He's got to get that teddy bear out. He's got to get
all your talking.
I always am talking way too much. You know that, Jack. USC is going to host Arizona this weekend. They open Pac-12 series. They're open Pac-12 play at Great Park. I don't know if you've seen it. You got a chance to check out Arizona on the Pac-12 network or anything. What kind of stands out from looking at their schedule, look at their stats, and if you've seen them play so far this season?
I've not seen an Arizona game yet this season, but this is a roster, at least, that is very different than the team that USC faced at the end of the season last year. And then, yes, you know, a team that went on a run during the Pac-12 tournament. You had some killers on that team last year. I mean, Kiko Romero was murdering the ball against USC. They had a bunch of bats in that lineup. It's a little bit different this year. You know, Garen Caulfield's a guy that's leading them, Brendan Summerhill, but not a lot of the same faces that you saw last season outside of someone like Emilio Corona, who had a really good year last year and is off to a decent start this year, hitting 250. But you know, this is a team that is hitting 300 as a team, so that is a lot higher than what USC is at. 863 team OPS through 11 games. Pitching's been better than USC as well, 4.79. And Shotgun, you mentioned they have faced three top 25 teams as well, so not like they're facing nobodies. This is a team right now has probably had a better season than USC, but a 5-6 record. But at home, if it's close, like you should be able to win the games at home. So I think USC should feel good about the way it comes into this series, but we will see, considering that right now, at least to this point in the season, Arizona is doing just about everything better than the Trojans.
Yeah, they are. But they also are 2-5 when they're playing away from home. Now, they started off the season with a nice series win over Northeastern. That's a top 25 team, a program that's got, they got their Saturday guys, a side armor that throws like 98 miles an hour. I am ecstatic.
That's what you were like, right? That.
Exactly, just minus 20 miles an hour or so. But, you know, that's a really strong opening weekend. But then they went to San Diego takes that series. They lose at TCU before they go play in Frisco this past weekend, and they played really tough competition, but they couldn't find a way to win. They lost 4-3 to Dallas Baptist, 7-6 to Alabama, and then they beat up on Indiana on Sunday to get in the win column. But they had lost 5-6 before that game, so they're a beatable team. Now, they have a solid Friday-Saturday combo with Jackson Kent, who's a lefty, and Clark Candiotti, the nephew, I believe, of the former knuckleballer Tom Candiotti. St. Mary's legend there. But, you know, they don't have a bunch of horses on the mound. Now, what they are doing much better, they took Boston College's pitching coach, Kevin Vance, and brought him in, and they are not walking people. Whereas USC's walking 5.5 guys, they walk 3. And that's top 15 in the nation. So they're not giving you free passes. You got to earn your way. And that's the big question mark with USC, with the fact that they have not been able to, you know, hit the ball very well. But they give up 10 hits per game. You know, the rest of their numbers are pretty average, pedestrian. Their offensive numbers, there's nothing that really stands out as really huge. Now, they're averaging twice as much runs as USC. They're averaging 8.2 runs. They also play in the desert. Ball travels a little bit more. They also
had one game where they scored 24.
They also played Utah Tech, which, Jack, have you ever heard of Utah Tech?
No, but apparently that day was Trivia Tuesday.
Because Utah Tech used to be Dixie State, and they just changed their name 2 years ago. So the Trailblazers. But, yeah, so this is a series that is winnable for USC. The big player they got to watch out for, and you mentioned a couple of guys that are hitting pretty well, Mason White. Their shortstop, I think he's playing shortstop this year. He's played second base last year. He's a dude. He's going to be a top five round pick eventually. The bat speed, everything is there. He's real. He's got five homers, I think, so far this season. Corona can get you with a home run, the deep ball, but he's also a guy that can get out. So there's pieces there, but they're a beatable team. Now, can you do it? That's the question. You just showed you can play with TCU. You showed you can play with Texas A&M. Now, can you go and beat someone at home, a team that has not played great on the road? That would be the big question. And then next week, you know, if we don't get a chance to podcast on Monday, then USC will play Cal Baptist on Tuesday next week at Irvine at Great Park, which is interesting that they're playing a Tuesday game at Great Park instead of LMU. Just noticed that. But Cal Baptist quality program, since they moved up to D1, will be, you know, they just took UC Irvine and played them really tough, who's still undefeated. They just played them really tough yesterday in a midweek game. So that'll be a tough matchup there. They've got some arms that can pitch in the midweek and stuff, which is usually the difference maker for mid-major versus high major in the midweek games. But it's going to be a quality opponent. Can USC handle them playing home again?
Yeah, and the question that we ended the last podcast with is the one that I'll end this one with as well. USC obviously had the four-game losing streak, but they beat Fullerton on Monday, which means can they build on the momentum that they were able to gather with a win? They could not do it after the two wins against Portland, where we thought things might be turning around. It's like, okay, well, now go beat Michigan. You'll be on a three-game win streak going into Texas. Take one or two of those games, and you'll feel good about where this team is at. They lose to Michigan, and they lose the three games over the weekend, blowing leads in a couple of them. You were able to get the win against Fullerton. Can you build on that, take it into the series against Arizona? No one's asking for, you know, a blowout in each game and a full sweep, but if you win the series against Arizona, you win the midweek game at home like you should against Cal Baptist, and you go win or compete in the series against Stanford, and all of a sudden you are inching closer to 500 through the first two conference series of the year, and that's a lot more respectable than where they sit right now at 3-9. But baseball, as you mentioned very early on in the episode, Shotgun, is a game of momentum. Right now, USC's got a little bit, and they need to find a way to get a lot of it moving on if they want to come back from the 3-9 start, because it's still possible for them to make the tournament. They've got to play like one of the best teams in the Pac-12 the rest of the way. They've got to play like one of the better teams in the entire country the rest of the way if they want to make the tournament, because with a 3-9 start, you do not give yourself very much leeway. So the question that I will end it off with is, can USC just build on the momentum it was able to pick up with the win? Because it has not been able to do that so far this season. And if that's a trend that continues the rest of the year, the season's not going to be over right now, but they're not going to get to where they want to go.
It all starts with, you're only as good as your next day starting pitcher. So it starts with Caden Aoki on Friday, and then see if you can build from there. So, you know, if he can come out and produce a gem, give him seven innings with one or two runs, put him in a position to win the game, you know, then you can go into the weekend and start building on things. That's something else they haven't really got from those starting pitchers is depth. They haven't really gotten to the seventh or eighth inning yet. So we'll
and
see.
And I feel like the first time that a starter goes deep into a game and really twirls a good game could mean a lot for this staff, because you get what that gives you, which is rest for the bullpen, which means you have a more rested bullpen the next day. But I think last year what Seth Etherton told us on the show, and I don't remember if I'm remembering his exact word, but he's like, he looked at what Caden Aoki was doing and he turned to the rest of the pitchers. He's like, well, who's gonna one-up him? Like, who's going to continue to do what Caden's doing? Look what he's doing, and let's do that as a staff. I think the first time someone goes out there and really twirls a gem, and you'll get the physical benefits, but also I think just the mental benefits of the staff seeing one of their own do it makes them want to do it a little bit more. It builds on that and the snowball effect starts. That could be what USC needs. Could happen with an offensive player, but they need the snowball to get rolling down the hill.
That's a great point. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. I'm your host, the Elder Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you to everyone. Oh, I forgot. We got a question. I got to answer it real quick just because we got to have that.
You always forget them.
I know. I didn't put it in the doc, and that's why I don't even know exactly where my email is pulled up at that I had it in. But we do have a question from Kevin. He wanted to know, you know, if there is one change that we can make, because the NCAA is changing some rules to college football. You're getting the headsets and everything. 2-minute warning. What rule change or changes would each of you like for baseball? And no fair saying more scholarships. Got to be an on-field change. He said his would be a limit on throws to first, probably not the limit of two the MLB has, but some limit.
Yeah, I would be totally fine with a limit of three throws to first. After the five-hour game on Friday between USC and TCU, I would like to see the extra inning runner at second base. Not in the postseason. You do it like what the Major League Baseball does, because teams, we've talked about it, Shotgun, where midweek games, you're running out of pitching. If you have to go to TCU went to the 12th inning against Washington State earlier in the week, had to go to the 11th inning against USC. College baseball is an offensive game, and you need an extra inning runner, I believe, in extras.
And they still went undefeated, so I don't think it is the best example there. Mine would be to allow them to have props. They have taken that away. They used to be able to have props, and now it's like super, it has to be super in the dugout.
Yeah, I was going to say, because Texas A&M had the mini hoop.
Yeah, Virginia Tech had a sledgehammer, which was really cool. So they actually had to redesign. They did redesigned a portion of their ballpark near the dugout so that they could then slam the hammer as long as they were technically in the dugout, because they would bring it out. So let the kids have fun. I've seen warnings for bat flips the last couple of times. I've seen
ejections
for bat flips. Like, and I understand, but also have a little feel. Like, one of them was a grand slam to go ahead in a game. Have some feel, Blue. Like, and I saw a game, William and Mary, and there was a huge bat flip, and it was a warning. Like, understand the situation a little bit, Blue. Let's go. Have a little feel. But, yeah, let's let the kids have fun. That's always my rule change, is to let's have some fun, guys.
Yeah, there you go. I'm all for bat flips and celebrations. College football has it. You've got some weird things on the sidelines to college football games. Why can't you have it during baseball?
Make sure it's in the dugout. That's apparently it. That's going to wrap it up, though, this edition of the Dado Download Podcast, part of the Peristyle Podcast family. Thanks again for sending in that question, Kevin, and for everyone else that sends in some questions. We really appreciate it. Thank you to my co-host, the baby of the show, Jack Smith. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. Please like, share, subscribe, leave us a review on your podcast listening platform, your favorite one. And I hope that you guys can join us for the next episode of the Dado Download Podcast.